This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts. And if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. So, David Attenborough's latest BBC television series, Secret Garden, shows us the delightful and diverse wildlife that's hiding in so many of our gardens, so close to our lives. And all that wildlife relies on us for somewhere to live and to thrive. Now, watching the amazing footage made me realise just how important our gardens are and how much potential they have to be an invaluable wildlife haven, if only we just take a few steps to welcome the wildlife in. I spoke to Lee Ellis, Engagement Manager at the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust, about what we can do in our own gardens. And I started by asking her about the idea of the secret garden and how so often there's so much more wildlife than we're aware of.
Yes, and I think it relates to us seeing or not seeing nature and wildlife in general. Those of us that are lucky enough to have gardens or some sort of outdoor space, how often do we just step outside and have a moment of peace and quiet and mindfulness to actually look around and tune our brains into the different sounds that we can hear and focus in on a piece of bird song and then notice that, oh, there's more than one bird singing here. And perhaps looking at one small patch of grass and noticing the different insects that are coming to it, whether they're on the ground or flying down and landing. But it's a whole new world. It's sort of like looking through a window into this magical world that's just going about its daily business and it's happening and we're not noticing it and we're missing out.
Yes, indeed. Well, it is the whole secret garden idea, isn't it? That garden that is happening without us noticing. But I think that is a lovely idea, actually, that we can be part of that secret if we just spend more time quietly observing. So let's think about ways in which we can help our own secret gardens. One of the things that all of us seem to love are bees, and we know how important they are, aren't they, for pollinating our food crops, but also for pollinating things like fruit trees, wildflowers. And there's lots of different types of wild bees, but one of the ones that we're particularly seeing at this time of year are the big bumblebees. So how do we help them? What can we do for them at this time of year?
The first thing that comes to mind is make sure that they've got something to drink, because even now we're getting April showers, but we've not had any significant rain in this area in Hertfordshire for a few weeks. So I notice I've got to top up my bird bath, and we're just leaving a little tray, dish, old pet food bowl or something around that they can drink from. That's important. I think a lot of us are aware about bees liking sugary water as well, but these are things that they can get from flowers, so dandelions, some of those things that we consider to be weeds and may want to jump to cut them down, they're actually vital for bees and all sorts of flying insects and pollinating insects. So if you are wanting to tidy up your garden, don't do all of it. Leave patches where a few dandelions will grow, for example.
Yes, leaving things a bit untidy is a good point, isn't it? Because it's not just about leaving weeds, but also places for bumblebees to nest, isn't it?
They'll choose all sorts of different things. Old tree trunks are good. If you've got a large space and there's a dead tree, either leave it standing as a stump sort of thing, or if it's lying down again, tree stumps are great habitats with the decomposing matter, but it's also a hole. Some of the bees will actually make a hole in the lawn, in the grass, and bury down. And again, where you've cleared away, you're perhaps you've done your winter pruning and you've got piles of twigs and old logs and leaf matter. So any of those old leaves that you've raked up, they don't need to go into the compost bin. Find a nice sort of corner, undisturbed somewhere where they can, I'll say, squirrel themselves away. But I don't know if bees squirrel.
We can talk about squirrels later. Do you know, I think you're exactly right. I remember once disturbing a bumblebee nest in my compost heap. So you wouldn't expect it, but just there amongst all the old weeds and old leaves and things like that, a bumblebee nest. So really worth looking out for them in these unlikely spots and just leaving them undisturbed.
Yes, and then another way is to create a dead hedge, and that doesn't need to be a large affair. It could just be a small border, so between stakes, so some little posts that could be 5-foot posts, but they could be, I don't know, 30 centimetres or even less than that. And in between, you lay your dead cuttings again, sort of branches and twigs. And so you've created a nice little border, and at the same time, it's fantastic habitat for bees and other insects.
Yeah, very cheap way as well of making a nice little fence, and that doubles up as wildlife habitat. It's brilliant, isn't it? And you don't need to worry about where you're going to get rid of all of those woody prunings. So a lot of boxes ticked there, aren't there? So you've mentioned the lawn, and I suppose the conflict with lawns, isn't it? We've got No Mow May coming up. But on the other hand, kids want to get out onto the lawn, and the dogs like to play on the lawn, and we like to sit out and whatever. How do we manage all of this but still have space for wildlife?
Depends on your size of your garden, of course. I'm just thinking my next door neighbours have got a big square patch of grass because they've got a couple of gorgeous golden retrievers. And I'm sort of thinking about maybe just down one end or one part of it could be left. You might want to fence it off with a dead hedge, perhaps. So both parties can live side by side, really. So there's a space for kicking the ball around. There's a space for the dog to play with toys and have a chew. And then there's a little area at the side where you've perhaps got your composting, where your piles of leaves and things are. And maybe you let the grass grow. Perhaps if you've got a tree, leave a circular area around the tree. But almost more importantly, it's about explaining, certainly to the children, because less easy to explain to the dogs, about why it's important to leave those bits and say, yeah, go and play ball, brilliant. I've left this bit over here. And the reason is, you know, get the children to understand why, even perhaps say, well, in between kicking the ball around, how do you feel about doing a little survey? How many insects are coming into this area? To make it part of their play.
Sounds like an absolutely tremendous idea. I love that. And then you've indoctrinated the next generation so that they don't mind a bit of long grass as well. So David Attenborough's The Secret Garden has shown us how important water is for so much wildlife. Now, sadly, there's nobody in Hertfordshire who's living in quite such an idyllic island in the middle of the Thames, like one of the gardens that we saw. But we can still manage something, perhaps a pond or even something smaller than that. Is this a good time of year to make a water feature for wildlife in our garden? And do you have any suggestions how we might do that?
Yes, it's a good time of year, but I would say any time of year is a good time of year. It can be as simple as using a washing up bowl or some container that you don't need anymore. It might be one of those, I don't know, 2 kilogram ice cream tubs, perhaps. As long as creatures have got access in and out, so either sink it into the ground or put materials around, let's say, a washing up bowl. So some bricks or some logs, so anything can climb up. And then when it's inside, make sure there are things inside for it to climb out again if it's not flying in and out. So again, some large stones, some pebbles, shingle, gravel, because hedgehogs, for example, can't swim. And if they fall into a pond of some sort and there's no way to help them climb out, they'll sadly drown. Yeah, so make sure something can climb in and climb out again. If you can get hold of some kind of aquatic plant, that's also great because you can get plants that oxygenate the water. So it helps keep the water clean. It's not good to put in a fountain or to put in fish, Again, unlikely in a washing up bowl, but if you did have a larger area, because, I mean, the fish just eat any insects and larvae that are trying to grow and breed in there, and fountains create an unnatural sort of disturbance. So plants will do the oxygenating, allow the water to breathe, and in that well, you shouldn't get any growth over the top. Any sort of, you know, pond slime or something.
Yeah. And should we worry if our little pond gets a bit green? Does that matter? Should we start cleaning it out then? Or is that okay? And is that just the way that nature intended ponds to be?
On the whole, yes. Generally, the plants will keep the water clean enough. And it might be that if it gets really hot in the summer, some of that perhaps needs just very carefully removing from the pond, but you have to check that there's no snails, for example, attached to it. But I've got a little bowl outside and it's fine. Occasionally the stones inside it get a bit of a green film on, but it hasn't stopped creatures coming to it, and they will come, especially if perhaps you know someone who has got an established pond, and they can usually spare you a little bit of pond plant, and they may come ready filled with eggs of some sort, and you find you've got a few little snails, and then other creatures will find it.
I think you're right. You know, I've got a pond in my garden. I couldn't believe how quickly it seemed that there was pond things in there. I've never put them in. They just arrived. It's like magic, isn't it? Going back to the magic theme again. So one of the things that will come to water is things like birds. And we've got to be a bit careful with feeding birds because of trichomoniasis, which is a serious disease which has decimated the populations of finches in particular. So what do we need to be careful of there?
It's about keeping their feeding stations clean. So the RSPB have just issued some new scientifically backed advice, and it's recommending that we don't put out a lot of food sort of during the months of May and September. And that's not to say we don't feed them at all. We're using hanging bird feeders. Make sure once a week you empty them out, or if they're not empty yet, but give them a good clean with a very mild detergent washing up liquid sort of thing. Any bird baths, again, give them a clean out once a week with a diff brush. Be careful not to put bird baths under a bird feeder so it would get bird poo in. And likewise, wherever you're hanging your feeders, hang them away from a nesting box, and try not to mix the different sorts of foods too closely together as well, so you're not feeding like bigger birds next to smaller birds. So like you would if you're feeding your pet dog or cat, you'd clean out their food bowl on a regular basis.
I suppose you're right. If we think about it like that, it just makes sense, doesn't it? We wouldn't be surprised if our cat or dog was sick if we never cleaned their food bowl out. Another issue as far as birds go is cats. Birds and cats obviously don't mix too well. And David Attenborough shows us Fluffy the cat trying to help himself to a tasty bird-shaped treat in a secret garden in Bristol. Now, you've got a cat, I know, Lee. So I wondered if you could just give us some tips on how we can just make our cats a little bit more bird friendly, perhaps.
Yes, trying to make a cat do anything is very, very difficult. But we can encourage some good behaviour. So, for example, I shut the cat flap at night and the cat stays indoors. So obviously they like to hunt at night. They are nocturnal creatures. And that's when a lot of the wildlife tends to come out as well. So he stays indoors at night. Try and position your bird boxes in places that are less accessible. I mean, young cats like to hunt, but they also like an easy ride. So if they've got to put too much effort into it, they won't perhaps be quite as keen, because it's not like they're hunting because they're hungry, generally.
And how about putting a bell on the cat's collar? Can that help?
A bell on the collar is a good idea. And I know you can get devices. There's one on the RSPB shop website that will emit a high frequency sound that we can't hear, but it's very unpleasant for cats.
Yeah. Okay. Some good tips there. So another garden favourite that we can't ignore is the hedgehogs. And Sir David Attenborough shows us possible conflict between hedgehogs and robo mowers, automatic mowing machines on our lawns, which are quite popular now. Have you got any tips for us there to reduce the possibility of hedgehog robo-mower fatalities?
But maybe just consider in the first place how important it is to have such a gadget. Don't use them at night. That's when hedgehogs are around. And again, like small mammals, mice and voles and shrews, again, they'll come out at night. Use it in the daytime, perhaps whilst you're there in your deck chair with your martini and you can keep an eye on the thing.
That's a very good idea. Loving that one, Lee. And finally, and I know this isn't cute and fluffy, but it is super important, isn't it? If we are out in our gardens and we're planting things, and we're buying compost, what must we look out for there?
You must make sure that it doesn't contain any peat. Peat is something that was always included in compost, but we now know that peat is a non-renewable resource. It takes millions of years to form, and there are plenty of other things that we can use. If you're buying a compost from a supermarket, do check the label. I myself have noted that even in places like Aldi and Lidl and other supermarkets are available, that a lot of them do emphasise that they are peat free.
Indeed, and we need all the peat to be in the peat bog, soaking up the carbon and supporting the invaluable wildlife. And as you say, if it doesn't say peat free on the sack, then it's not going to be peat free in the sack. Well, look, Lee, there were some lovely ideas there, particularly the one about sipping the martini whilst watching the robo mower. Thank you so much, and well, let's hope that we get lots of secret gardens springing up around Hertfordshire. Lovely to talk to you today.
Thank you, Amanda. Likewise.
I was talking there to Lee Ellis, Engagement Manager at the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust. And I'll pop links to the RSPB advice on feeding birds, to the Herts and Middlesex Wildlife Trust advice on wilder gardening, and to the Hertfordshire organisation Getting Neighbours Together to Help Wildlife, the Wildhood Watch. I'll pop all of those links into the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you'll find on the podcast page of mix926.com. I'll be with you at the same time next week, but until then, thank you for listening.